Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Thursday, October 30th, and a lot going on in D.C. besides the shutdown and dealing with the utterly ridiculous Democrats, and we're going to get to that later on in the program. But you may have heard about the Arctic Frost investigation. That's kind of an informal label for an investigation that is going on, according to an unclassified document released by Senator Chuck Grassley, involving the FBI analysis related to the post-2020 election inquiries that were made on behalf of President Trump, and how the Democrats at the time and following were targeting Trump and his associates. And so the House Judiciary Committee, which of course is chaired by Congressman Jim Jordan, released this yesterday on X, said, breaking new Arctic Frost documents reveal even further wide-ranging investigation by Biden's DOJ to take down President Trump and his supporters. The highlights include the Arctic Frost investigators utilized FBI field offices from across the country to conduct its investigation. The investigators requested over $16,000 to travel to conduct more than 40 interviews. 45 individuals, including Steve Bannon, Scott Perry, Rudy Giuliani, Jeffrey Clark, John Eastman, and Mark Meadows, were potentially under investigation. Another 111 individuals, including Peter Navarro, Dan Scavino, Jeff Rosen, and Ed Martin, were also potentially under investigation. And so you can read all of the documents at that link at the Judiciary House website and see the more than, so far, I think it's more than 200 documents that have been released under FBI Director Kash Patel that really show the wide-ranging extent that the government under Biden used their resources to target their political opponents, which is the definition of lawfare. So joining me now to discuss this is Chairman Jim Jordan himself. So good morning, Congressman, and tell us more about what these documents reveal.
Good to be with you, Jenna. Well, one of the things I always say when we start these investigations, we've been doing these now for years and different things, that the only thing we get wrong at the outset is that it's always worse than we thought. And that is the case here. It wasn't just eight United States senators that they got the phone logs and phone records of. It wasn't just that they took a sitting member of Congress's phone, Jack Smith's guys, prior to coming to work for the special counsel. Some of his lieutenants were involved in this Arctic Frost, and they took Scott Perry's phone. It was much broader, much pervasive, much more obnoxious than any of that. And it truly was, as Senator Grassley said, a fishing expedition. And think about this one. They got the bank records from Dan Scavino. Dan Scavino, amazing guy, did all the social media work for President Trump. They went and got his bank records. What probable cause existed that Dan Scavino was involved in some kind of criminal activity? There was nothing there. But yet this is the kind of harassment, the kind of ridiculous things that they did in this special counsel investigation, this Arctic Frost that turned into Jack Smith special counsel work. This is why we want to talk to Jack Smith. I mean, we've already talked to Jenna. We've already talked to two of his lieutenants, Mr. Bratt and Mr. Windham. They each exercised their Fifth Amendment liberty 71 and 73 times, respectively, in that deposition. They used their Fifth Amendment right to questions like, was this a political operation designed to harm President Trump? They refused to answer that. We asked them how many other people, in addition to, because we'd had Mr. Windham in here just recently, how many other people, in addition to these eight United States senators, did you guys spy on? Did you guys surveil? We exercise our Fifth Amendment right and refuse to answer. So that we want to talk to Jack Smith in a deposition format because we got lots of questions that we think the country deserves answers to.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would make sense that that you want to question Jack Smith and exactly what was going on here. And some of these documents also at least pretend to reveal that this wasn't just a wide-ranging investigation on the federal level, but there was actually collusion, for lack of a better term, between the Biden DOJ, Jack Smith, and other state-level either attorneys general or district attorneys on the state level to target President Trump and his allies.
Yeah, this was all part of what they've called this alternate elector operation that they said was somehow nefarious. Or it was all part of that was their investigation looking into this, and it was looking at the state level as well. And the number of Republicans and Republican entities who they went after is truly astounding. I think it's 180 different subpoenas, number of individuals, a number of different entities. And then it was phone records, bank records, documents, communications, you name it. They were sweeping up. It looks like they didn't go to a judge to get a warrant for this information. They simply did an administrative subpoena. And it looks like these by and large, these companies and banks complied with that, which I understand, the business is like, oh, the FBI wants something. We better comply. But that's something I think we need to think about a little bit going forward, because I think this, as Senator Grassley said, was a true fishing expedition just out there going after your political enemies. And as you said, this is the definition of lawfare. That we saw, I think in a up close and firsthand way.
And I'm speaking with Congressman Jim Jordan for this update on Arctic Frost and what we're learning that I think everybody kind of knew at the time that this was so wide ranging. There were so many people that that had some of these, really ridiculous subpoenas. I mean, I was one of them that myself and my family, even to the extent of like my parents and my brother's cell phone records, just because we all are on like the same family plan, their phone records were subpoenaed through our carrier at the time, which is utterly ridiculous. And when you're talking about
your carrier probably didn't tell you, you probably didn't find this out until later when you went from your carrier. Is that accurate?
Well, so I just got a notice from them saying, this has been subpoenaed. And I also got a notice like from Google for my Gmail account. Yep. So all of it is just basically a notice, like we're going to comply unless you give us a court order otherwise, is basically the information that they provide, which, as you mentioned, Congressman, I mean, this is very invasive. It's, in my opinion, directly against the Fourth Amendment's requirement that people should be secure in their persons, their property, and their effects, which would include all of these documents. And so, for these carriers that just willingly hand over this information, it's very difficult to then, go and spend the time and effort when, I was told by my lawyers at the time, it wouldn't even really be worthwhile. And even on principle, though, it seems like even if there, there was nothing in there that actually mattered as far as I was concerned. But the principle of it is, why should the government have access to things like this? Like you're talking about Dan Scavino's bank records. I mean, that's something private to him that the government has no business snooping
into.
And
your emails and your phone logs, who you talk to and when you talk to him. I don't they weren't getting the content of your call, but they were getting like when you called someone, who you talked to, when they called you. Time of day, who the person was, and that sort of thing, and then who you emailed. I don't know. Maybe they got the contents of the email. I don't know. But it's supposed to be, you go to a separate and equal branch of government, you get a warrant, and demonstrate to a judge there's probable cause for this. You just don't get a subpoena this and get this typically. But that's how it operates.
Yeah, and so, which I think is shocking to people who are listening to see, how wide ranging. This was, and the depth of the invasion of privacy. And so with this investigation and with these documents that have been released, can there be any accountability ultimately is potentially one of the outcomes, referrals to now Pam Bondi's DOJ for some accountability or some legislation to prevent this kind of thing when and if another Democrat is in office and has their person the head of the DOJ. I mean, this really needs to stop.
Yeah, no, it does. Look, we go through this in a serious way. If we think it's warranted that we send a referral, we will do that. We did it in a related on a related issue last week with a different individual, not this specific Arctic Cross investigation or not directly related to Jack Smith special counsel, but we did it with John Brennan last week. And as I said last week, the Judiciary Committee, we don't do many of these. We only send referrals if it is warranted, if the evidence is clear that this individual lied to Congress and obstructed an investigation. And we think it is clear with John Brennan, and that's why we sent that one last week. On that particular case, John Brennan told us in a deposition in the last Congress, he told us that he was not involved with the dossier, didn't want it included, preferred that it not be included in the intelligence community assessment. The only problem with that is when Tulsi Gabbard declassified a report from the House Intelligence Committee from several years ago, they found just the opposite. And they actually had in writing where Brennan said, yeah, this should be in the ICA. And more specifically, they relate an incident where a CIA official approached Mr. Brennan and said, we shouldn't include this dossier. This dossier doesn't stand up. There's no underlying intelligence to support this thing. It's bogus. And Brennan said, yeah, but doesn't it ring true? Demonstrating, I think, clearly his bias, his motive of trying to go out and get President Trump. And so we think it was really clear. And you know this, Jenna, you're not supposed to lie, but you're definitely not supposed to lie when you're under oath talking to Congress. It's a violation of 18 U.S.C. 1001. And so we referred him to the Justice Department. And as we go through this stuff, if we find other individuals who clearly are lying and obstructing, we will refer them as well.
Yeah. And as you should. I mean, and this is where now, of course, the left is suggesting that this is lawfare and that it's just targeting political opponents. But they can't use that as a guise or a pretext when there is actual evidence and underlying facts that would justify a referral. I mean, this is not the targeting of individuals just because they happen to be, you know, a Democrat or not a fan of Trump. I mean, this is exactly what the Justice Department is supposed to do, is to go after people where there is actually evidence of criminal activity. And that's not what happened, according to these documents, at least, when they were the ones that were committing the lawfare.
No, well said. Well said. And I do think it is worthwhile for folks of the Justice Department. And I have the utmost confidence. I think Attorney General Bondi and Deputy Attorney General Blanche and Kash Patel over at the FBI, I think they're doing a great job. But I do think it's, and we've heard talk of this, that it's appropriate to examine this idea of a conspiracy. Was there a concerted effort by key people in key positions in the Obama administration way back when, and, of course, traveling up through the Biden administration to conspire to go after President Trump and other Republicans in this lawfare effort. And I think that's worthwhile to look at, because it sure looks like they were conspiring. When you go back in 2016 and they changed the intelligence community assessment, Brennan and Clapper and these guys did it. There was a meeting in the White House where they said, no, this ICA we're not going to use. We want it changed. They said about changing it. That's when Brennan used the dossier, even though he said he didn't, and on and on. But that's where it began. And I think it's worthwhile to dig into all that and find out, was there a real conspiracy here to undermine the president, to go after the president, and to go after people who also supported the president?
Yeah, and even during his first administration, I mean, you're mentioning the Obama administration all the way through Biden. That would include when Donald Trump was in the White House. And we saw all of that with the lawfare against him from, you know, the Mueller investigation to the first sham impeachment, you know, all the way through the January 6th committee hearings and then afterwards. And the House Judiciary GOP account also posted that new documents prove Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney were working hand in hand with Jack Smith. The partisan J6 committee provided transcripts, documents, and text messages all to take down President Trump and his associates. And so is this type of of collusion and this, you know, this kind of coordination, is there a potential that this was a criminal conspiracy?
Well, again, I leave that to the Justice Department, but I do think it's interesting that the January 6th committee and the special counsel were you know, just working arm in arm, because, you know, all throughout our history, sort of modern times, when you have a special counsel, they're viewed as independent. That's why they're created. Merrick Garland said, oh, there's going to be President Trump is running now. He's announced he's running against President Biden after the 2022 midterms. President Trump announces he's going to run for the White House. And that's when Merrick Garland said, okay, the guy I work for in the administration, President Biden's going to run. The other guy's running. I need a special counsel to do this because it'll look, you know, just for appearance and everything else. And so he brings in Jack Smith. They're supposed to be independent. And what we found out was, no. They're working with the January 6th committee, like I said, arm in arm. So that I do think is a concern. And something else that we, as you point out, we highlighted in our Twitter post.
Well, and last question for you, Congressman, and I so appreciate every time that you join and give us these updates. It's so incredibly important for accountability, for transparency, and also to constitutional protections. So for all of these people that are in the hundreds that were targeted and, you know, had huge legal expenses, I mean, their lives overended, you know, and I'm one of them, frankly. I mean, I would love to know, and I'm sure that the hundreds of others would love to know, is there any opportunity for either legislation or through something that Congress can do to make us whole for what we all went through?
Well, I do think, you know, we saw this in last Congress when we pointed out that Bank of America just turned over bank records again when the FBI asked for them. In that case, I don't even think there was a subpoena. So I do think there's something there that we should look at. And, of course, the other thing that's coming up for reauthorization in the spring of next year is the whole FISA law. And I do think we should strengthen that to protect Americans' privacy and your communications and everything else. So we are looking at all that. A lot of that is focused in our committee. We think, in particularly with FISA, this what's called the 702 program, we think anytime the government searches that database and they use an American's name, an American's email address, or an American's phone number, we think they should have to go to a separate equal branch of government and get a probable cause warrant to do that. Right now, that's not the case. And they can search what I call this giant database, this giant haystack of information. They can search that now, doing that very thing, using your name, your email address, or your phone number, and get information about you that they picked up when they were surveilling other people around the world. Inevitably, you're going to pick up Americans, and lots of them. So we do think that's something that we will try to. As you know, we offered that amendment last Congress. It wound up losing 212 votes to 212 votes. It was a tie. And on ties, you don't win. So we're going to try it again. But yeah, that's something we're definitely looking at.
Amazing. Well, we've got to take a break here. But Congressman Jim Jordan, thank you so much for your tireless efforts on all of these things. It's so incredibly important. And like I said at the very beginning, there's still a lot going on, even in the midst of the government shutdown. That's been kind of the biggest news item because everyone is so focused on that. But there is still work that Republicans in Congress are doing that is very important, not just to the people who've been affected by this, but for the future, because inevitably when the balance of power shifts a little bit again. Ultimately, we need to make sure that this type of lawfare never, ever happens again. So Congressman Jim Jordan, really appreciate it. You can follow him on X at @Jim_Jordan and also at @JudiciaryGOP. I'd encourage you to follow both of those accounts. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Very often, Charlie Kirk would call me and he would say, not attaboy, but he would say, do more, do more, do more. And I listened to Charlie because he was a dear friend and because I knew that he loved this country. My point is, the best way in your life to honor Charlie Kirk's legacy, it's not to despair, but to hope in the future of this country. If you disagree with something, then get involved in the movement to save this country. If you think that we could be doing more, then pick up the phone and get involved in the effort to change our minds and change the future of the United States of America in the process. My friends, the rebels of Ole Miss, despair is a sin. Do not give in to despair. Let's keep fighting to save the United States of America. Thank you and God bless you.
All right, that was Vice President J.D. Vance at last night's Turning Point event that was very highly anticipated, and massive crowds lined up in the rain at Ole Miss for the Turning Point USA event with VP Vance and also Erica Kirk. And it was really an incredible event. I did not watch the entire event, saw, you know, parts of it. And then, of course, you know, some of the more top rated clips that were posted on social media. But the thing that really surprised me, actually, was that the vice president didn't just give a speech. He actually engaged with the audience in a kind of Charlie Kirk style, where he took questions from the audience, kind of kept it very light, but really just engaged, you know, kind of one-on-one. Like I was talking with Devin, you know, one of my great producers in the break, and we were saying that, you know, a few of them just called him JD, and he didn't correct him. He didn't just say, you know, that's Mr. Vice President to you, you know, kind of how the left always would, you know, say that. You can't call him Joe. You got to call him Mr. President, whatever. He really just engaged on a very human level. And I think that was a really wonderful way to honor Charlie's legacy and continue the Turning Point movement. So Chris Woodward joins us now. He's a reporter for American Family News and often heard on Today's Issues. And he was at the Ole Miss event last night. So, Chris, good morning. And tell us from your perspective, your take as you were there on the floor.
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah, we were there with AFN covering the event like a lot of other news outlets. I was happy to be there. It was a great event. It did get political at times, but it was really a celebration of Charlie Kirk's life and legacy, which is something that J.D. Vance tried to encourage other people to follow. But first and foremost, it was very pro-Jesus. Erica Kirk came out and spoke, the widow of Charlie Kirk, before J.D. Vance, and both of them began their speeches by speaking of Christ, and they quoted Scripture, and they encouraged the students in the audience, and really all the students on the campus there, and the millions of people watching, that we need to put Jesus first. We need to follow Jesus first. Jesus needs to be first and foremost in our lives, and that is what made the event great. It was not just a MAGA rally or a political convention to try to encourage or sign up voters. They were talking about Jesus, which is what everybody in that room needed to hear. And quite frankly, yeah, kudos to Ole Miss and Turning Point for having us out. There is a stereotype or a line of thinking that Ole Miss is a party school, but I can tell you from having been in that arena last night, it was a church service and Jesus was right there with us.
That's amazing. And, you know, that really does honor Charlie's legacy because he would bring the Christian worldview, obviously, into every engagement and Turning Point event that he did personally. And of course, these campus tours, and, you know, Erica has said a number of times since his assassination that these were the events that he loved the most in engaging with those students. Mm-hmm. And he would always bring the truth into it. But first and foremost, he would bring the reason that all of this matters, which is, of course, the truth of the gospel of Christ. And so to put that front and center definitely honored his legacy. And one of the other things that Vice President Vance was asked about that that he was just very candid on was his wife's lack of faith and how that yeah. works in their marriage, because he is a Catholic. And she is an agnostic, apparently. I wasn't aware of that. I actually thought that she, you know, had a different faith. But he said she's an agnostic and responded to that by saying that he hoped that eventually she would see things the way that he does. Of course, you know, coming into a saving knowledge of Christ. How was that received, do you think, in that context as you were there, Chris?
It was very well received. He got a lot of applause. And what was interesting about that situation is that was probably the third or the fourth question from the people that lined up at the in the floor to ask questions of the vice president. And this lady is the one that confronted him about that. And she had a series of questions. And at one point he said, I'm going to do my best to try to answer all these as best as possible. And he began his response by answering her questions about political issues, immigration and stuff like that. But then he circled back, excuse the sakeism, he circled back to what she began with, and that was how he's raising his kids and the situation he's in with his wife. For people that did not see it, for people that are not aware, he did tell the audience that they have made it a point and they are raising their children as Christians. She does go to church with him, and she has talked to people in his church about their situation, and he is praying that she would come around and come to that life-saving decision that we all need to make with Jesus to leave this earth and be with him in eternity. And that was what I think really stood out and probably is going to be lost in the news coverage today from people that weren't there to see it live, is he didn't have to answer that. And quite frankly, when she mentioned that, I thought, I don't know that he's going to answer this. It might be too personal. But he began by answering her questions about political stuff, and then he brought it back to religion. And that is what, again, was so important and what really set this apart from some of the other stuff that you might go to in terms of a political rally. Again, it wasn't just about voting. They did encourage people to do that. Vance himself also encouraged people to work and to work hard like Charlie Kirk did. Yes, to vote. Yes, to encourage people to sign up and be politically active, get people at a TPUSA event. But he brought it back to Jesus, and that's what set this apart.
That's really incredible. And I'm speaking with Chris Woodward, who is a reporter for American Family News. You can go to American Family News and read all of the important headlines. And from a Christian worldview perspective, at least from our reporters, we do post some of the other things, you know, like from the AP and so forth. But, you know, really excellent news outlet. And I'm really glad that you were there and, you know, kind of saw that because it is so different. Because a lot of these political events that I've been to personally, it is so different when you're there in person, even than just watching on a live stream or just catching a couple of clips here and there that maybe are cut a little bit out of context. But you know, it's really fascinating to me to see how transparent Vice President J.D. Vance is compared to how President Trump is very, very, very private about his faith and his beliefs. I mean, he's very, President Trump is very open about a lot of things. I mean, we all know exactly what he's thinking like 180% of the time, right? But on issues of faith, he really doesn't say much. And usually it's kind of an offhanded remark or something that's controversial or, you know, it's quippy. And like, is he joking? Is he not? Whatever. So this kind of contrast, I think, frankly, is refreshing to see because J.D. Vance, I think, has really solidified himself as somebody genuinely relatable and in a good way. I mean, not everybody has to be, you know, relatable. And I think that that's kind of an overused metric, especially for politicians, pastors, that kind of thing. But in this context, I think it's actually really, it speaks well of him. And when he first did Charlie Kirk's show, that first live show after Charlie was killed, and he was very transparent saying, you know, how Charlie's death affected him, how it motivated him to be a better husband and father. All of that, I think, speaks very well of him and is very engaging to a younger generation that is very hungry for that.
Yes. Yeah. And J.D. Vance is kind of like a brother that's got a good head on his shoulders. He's got a solid job. He's got his family. That's first in his life. And he's, you know, going to take a firm stance on his beliefs and his opinions, but he's not going to turn the table over at Thanksgiving and ruin the memory for everybody. And that's what I think helps the Trump administration is having somebody like a J.D. Vance there, but also the faith leaders that do pop in the Oval Office from time to time to meet with not only the most powerful man on the planet, but also members of Congress that also need God.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that Vance also said, and we'll play this clip, is the advice that Charlie always gave every time he spoke. And he said, I would be remiss and not honoring to Charlie's legacy if I didn't repeat this. Listen to cut three.
Charlie wasn't just a political figure. He wasn't just a guy who went around campus and said very interesting things and hosted all of these debates. He was a person who, particularly to the young people of this country, to all of you, he had the very best advice. And I think that's the most important way for me to honor Charlie, which is to repeat that advice, something I found true in my own life. Charlie wanted all of you, whatever life path you chose, whatever career you chose, whatever you ultimately did for a living, Charlie wanted you more than anything to invest in the things that were worth having, to build a life that was worth building. And that started, the most important advice he ever gave you was fall in love, get married, and start a family. And I can't honor Charlie without repeating that most important advice.
And I think, Chris, that is exactly what, you know, the American Family Association says as well, is that, you know, we are very pro-family, and it's really encouraging to hear the sitting vice president being so pro-family and the first institution that God ordained.
Yes. Yeah, I heard that, and I kind of thought of, like, sermon comments I've heard from my pastor and other pastors that, you know, to really make a change in the White House or the State House or the Capitol, we really need to make sure we are taking care of business in our houses. And America is at its strongest when our homes are at their strongest. It kind of goes, you know, some people think it takes a village. It really takes all the homes in the village having moms and dads doing their thing, training up their kids to be not only God-fearing, Jesus-loving, saved individuals, but patriots. And that, again, is something that stands out and really separates what TPUSA is doing from your standard political event.
Yeah, absolutely. And last question for you, Chris Woodward. He's a reporter at American Family News. You can also follow him on X. I'd encourage you to do that as well. For the future and the not just the legacy of Charlie Kirk, but to continue the mission of Charlie Kirk with Turning Point, I think these events are showing that their momentum is only growing and that Turning Point is going to continue. And hopefully that mission that is so focused on Christ is going to continue. What kind of energy and momentum did you feel there for Turning Point as an organization and carrying that mission forward?
I would say without a doubt, it is alive and well. Oftentimes when organizations come about, they kind of have, they're a flash in the pan, and something happens, maybe somebody takes a job somewhere else, and they kind of fall apart during the change of leadership. But after having seen the rally last night, after hearing comments from other TPUSA chapters, I know students that are in several. I know teachers and faculty advisors of TPUSA chapters. It's gangbusters. For example, the faculty advisor for TPUSA at Ole Miss, I spoke to him a couple of days ago when he agreed to take over as faculty advisor for TPUSA in the summer. He described the membership as, quote, a handful of members. And today it's 400-something strong, and it's only going to grow based on the interest and the optimism out there. I mean, people really believe in this organization, and that was very apparent by the packed house that we were in last night, and there were people standing outside that didn't get to go in.
Yeah, that's really incredible that there's that much turnout, and I know a lot of them were there for VP Vance and also for Erica as well. I mean, she came out, and it was just so beautiful to see her thank everyone for their prayers and support, and she knows that she has a worldwide family of Christians who love her, who are praying for her and her children, praying for the whole Turning Point family, who of course, have lost their leader and friend as well, but especially for her who lost her husband and the father to her children, to just see how encouraged she's been by the family of God. That is exactly what Christians are supposed to do. And we need to continue to pray for Erica, pray for Turning Point, pray, of course, for J.D. Vance, for President Trump. But Chris Woodward, thanks so much. Glad you got to be there. And we'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. Well, in the midst of the government shutdown, November 1st, which also happens to be my birthday, by the way, and I'm celebrating with friends this weekend. Very excited about that. But a lot of people on SNAP benefits, formerly known as food stamps, are not super excited about November 1st. That marks the date that food stamps will likely, the funding will be cut off as the government continues that shutdown. And approximately 42 million Americans, according to the New York Post, or one in eight people nationwide, receive SNAP payments, which is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and they are threatening on TikTok to riot and to loot on November 1st, saying that they will not be paying for anything. And if their benefits from the government lapse, then they're just going to go into some of these big box stores like Walmart that they say lacks some, you know, security. And there will be just some overwhelming numbers of them that they will just go in to these big box stores, take whatever they want and not pay for it, because that's what the government is basically allowing them to do with food stamps. Do you see the correlation here, though, between the people who receive government assistance? And by the way, most of these TikTokers have like the beautiful nails, which as a woman, when I get my nails done, it is not cheap. Some of these that are like super long extensions and have all the designs on them, I mean, these are like over $100 nails, right? So they have all their nails, they have their lashes that are done, they have their hair all done and everything. Somehow they can afford that, but they're not willing to pay for food because they think that they are entitled to a government assistance program that provides it for them, and they don't have to go out and, you know, get a job like the rest of us. The actual solution to not receiving SNAP benefits is to go out and actually be a productive member of society. But this is what happens when the mentality of these people is that it is a right to receive government assistance instead of something that is actually needed and is a privilege that the government is providing to you under certain circumstances. And hey, when the government runs out of money, well, guess what? Maybe you have to provide it for yourself. And this is exactly why all of these entitlement programs, in my opinion, need to go away anyway. I mean, this should be biblically the province of the church to help people who are genuinely in need, not the ladies who can go out, you know, and spend $500 on, you know, their aesthetic, but they don't want to spend, you know, $9 on a package of chicken at the grocery store, or, you know, a few dollars on a gallon of milk. This is just them trying to supplement their income when really they're not willing to go out and actually have hard work for it. And there are so many of these TikTokers that are out there who their worldview is so entitled that they are correlating now the benefit of basically having Snap as a pass-through to steal, because they're just saying, well, the Snap benefits allow me to just go in and take whatever I want. And if I don't have the Snap benefit to take, I'm just going to take it anyway. That is their mindset. And I recognize that there are some people who genuinely are in need. But again, this is why historically and frankly constitutionally, the original design of American government was not that the government would provide all of this assistance. It was so that the church would have its place in society to actually care for the poor, the widow, and the needy, like what the Bible requires the church to do, but actually to be able to analyze that within our local community, know these individuals personally, and not have our tax dollars go and pay for someone's food that, I mean, for a lot of these people, and there could be other things, you know, going on in their lives that I'm not aware of, but again, you know, for a lot of these TikTokers, doesn't seem to be any reason why they can't go out and actually work at Walmart themselves and buy their own food and groceries instead of being so upset that the government isn't providing it for them. And I want to play, you know, just a couple of these clips, if we have time to play more than one, because it is so incredibly insane what some of these people are saying. And there was one, a lot of these that are talking about Black power and how, you know, all of this to them relates to somehow being slighted on the basis of their race and how they're just going to go in and take. And some of these people are not even suggesting just looting the big box stores. They're suggesting that they'll go in and target specifically white homes and communities. And go into individuals' homes and rob them and take from them just because of a difference of their race. I mean, this is the worldview of the left. Listen to just one of these rants of how insane this is. This is Cut 7.
I just wanted to come real fast just to make this video, just to make something very, very clear to the white man. Black Americans do not care about your government shutdown, and Black Americans do not care about you taking away our EBT and our government assistance, because Black Americans never depended on the American government to take care of us and feed us, because we never could. We were never able to depend on the government, in spite of what you may say and what you may try to force us to believe. So you can sit back and you can mock, you can laugh, and you can think that you're about to starve us to death, but I'm here to let you know that we are going to eat regardless, even if we have to hunt you animals down and roast and eat you. The delectable crackers and cheese. We will make it happen if we have to, trust and believe me. And if it takes this government shutdown for Black people to finally come from under the government and understand that we don't need to be paying our taxes into this government, what we really need to be doing is taking care of one another, buying land and growing our own food and building our own nation. If this government shutdown and starvation is what it's going to take, then let the party begin. It's Black power, baby, and we rise.
This is demonic. I mean, this lady is absolutely insane and is showing utter hatred for her fellow man. And on one hand, is saying, you know, we've never been able to depend on the government, but at the same time is very upset, clearly, that the government that she's been relying on is taking away a benefit. I mean, it's completely irrational and delusional, but this is the worldview of the left. Utterly insane, irrational, delusional, and demonic. And this is the conclusion of a worldview that tries to stratify people based on a hierarchy of their intrinsic characteristics, instead of the biblical worldview that every human being is made in the image of God, has inherent dignity and worth by virtue of being a human being, and all of our differences that God so wonderfully created us with, and our immutable characteristics, like our age, our place of birth, our the skin tone of our melanin, our gender, you know, things that we can't change about ourselves because God created us uniquely. Those things do not depend on our value. Our value does not depend on those things. And yet, that is every ism that the left tries to promulgate, whether it's sexism, racism, ageism, all of these things there, from abortion of the unborn to completed life bills and not taking care of the elderly and discrimination based on age and, you know, value and productivity to society, all of those things are absolute lies from the pit of hell. And this is why we have to have a society that is built on the truthful premise that every human being is valuable and that we understand the proper role of government. Because if we have a society that is so insane, like all of these people who are going out on TikTok saying, we don't care that the government is cutting off our funding because we're just going to go and take it. They don't respect the individual. They don't respect private property. They don't respect work. They don't respect law and order. They don't respect having any sort of entitlement that actually isn't an entitlement that the government is not obligated to provide to them. If they don't have this worldview, we cannot actually have a well-ordered society with these types of people. And you can go and listen to how insane even more of these people are on an account called EBT of TikTok. It's kind of evoking the libs of TikTok view. And EBT of TikTok is out there showing more and more people who are so outraged that their benefits are lapsing, that they're threatening to loot and riot, but they're showing and they're evidencing their worldview. And this is the same worldview that goes into all of these isms. It's the very same worldview with the lack of respect for work ethic, lack of respect for private property, lack of respect for law and order. It's the very same worldview that goes into lack of respect for the unborn, lack of respect for the elderly, lack of respect for women, lack of respect for men in society. All of these different problems go back to the very same premise that we are excising God and morality from society, and therefore every man can do whatever is right in his or her own eyes. And that's what these people are saying. And I want to play just a part of this clip. We're not going to have time, so I'm just going to cut it off, Devin, kind of in the middle of it. But this is cut six of this woman who's showing for the cameras what she stole and saying, I don't want to pay for it, so I didn't, and I want to show you how you also cannot pay for it. And this is what society is becoming when we have such an unbiblical worldview that people are openly suggesting that it's perfectly fine to go steal just because you don't want to pay for it. This is cut six.
Hi, you guys. I'm out of the store. So they wanted $7 for this. Mind you, I don't have food stamps anymore. They cut me off. So I only had $22 left in food stamps. So this is what I stole. Okay. They wanted $9 for this. I said, oh, I don't got $9. Then they wanted $2 for this. They wanted $7 for this. I'm making some stuffed salmon today. These are needed. I'm not paying $7 for that. Okay? Let me show you the most important thing to me. Short ribs. Take off the label so that you don't beep. Get your meat. How many do you think that I got?
All right, let's cut it off there, and you can go to EBT of TikTok and listen to this full clip. And she actually suggests also, by the way, going to churches and asking for a handout as well. So churches, be very careful that you're not scammed by some of these con artists. But, you know, there are people who can't afford food that, and, you know, all of this gourmet stuff, that are not out there making short ribs and stuffed salmon with stolen products. They're actually living paycheck to paycheck because they're honest, upright people. And this just infuriates me because this woman is so brazenly out there saying, I don't want to pay for it. So I just went and let me show you my haul and what I stole. And I really hope that this woman is being tracked down in whatever state she's in and that she actually gets arrested and punished, because that's ultimately the conclusion to this, is that people have to be held accountable for their worldview. And when they violate normative standards of right and wrong, they are actually held accountable, and we show them as an example. So be very careful this weekend. If you live in more of an urban city and population, you may want to do your shopping today or tomorrow ahead of Sunday and this weekend. And actually, Saturday, I think, is November 1st. But if you want to do that ahead of these potential looting and riots here in my home state of Florida, the governor's office has been very clear. Don't even try it, because law and order is actually enforced in Florida. I feel very secure in my state. We should feel very secure in this country to not have this kind of lunacy running around. But this is why worldview absolutely matters. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.